Welcome, everybody, to JAT Chat, presented by the Journal of Athletic Training, the official journal of the National Athletic Trainers Association. I'm Dr. Kara Radzak, an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Nutrition Sciences at UNLV, and I'm your host for today. The purpose of today's event is to provide an open forum for athletic trainers and all other allied healthcare professionals to ask questions and discuss the recently published challenges for newly credentialed athletic trainers during their transition to practice, which is currently out as an online first in the Journal of Athletic Training. Today, I am joined by two of the authors. First, we have Dr. Stacy Walker, a professor of athletic training at Ball State University. She's also the founder and secretary of the Association for Athletic Training Education. I'm also pleased to be joined by Dr. Ashley Thrasher, an assistant professor in the athletic training program at Western Carolina University. She is currently serving on a work group that's tasked with examining the needs and providing recommendations to support early career athletic trainers during their transition to practice. In order to make today's JAT Chat work as smoothly as possible, please submit your questions during the Facebook Live comment section or as a tweet at JAT_NATA using the hashtag JATChat, all one word. And at this point in time, I would like to introduce Stacy and Ashley. Thank you all so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
So this is very timely. The first thing that I wanted to bring up is you guys utilize this term transitions shock or shock of clinical practice in your manuscript. Can you describe that a little bit to us so we can set the stage of what people are undergoing during their transition?
Sure. This term of transition shock was coined from nursing literature in which they were looking at that immediate acute, dramatic stage of the process of going from a student to a professional and how they kind of felt during that role transition. And so for ours, that's something that we really saw in our results of that transition shock to there was a shock of being full-time with those crazy schedules. There was a shock of making that transition and making decisions without having somebody over their shoulder or their preceptor around to help them with that. And that transition shock, they also kind of had the shock of deluge of patients that come once school gets out and they just have a full athletic training room and trying to manage all of that. And so one interesting thing about the transition shock that they found within nursing literature is that sometimes new professionals don't even realize they're going through it until they've had a chance to look back and reflect on it. So I think that's kind of looking at that term transition shock. That's what we saw with our participants, and it emulated what they saw with the nursing literature to see when you go from that student who's got the preceptor with them to being all on your own as a clinician, it was kind of a shock in that experience.
So that kind of brings up the next thing I wanted to ask you guys is, are we as athletic trainers, as a healthcare profession, are we normal compared to other healthcare professionals?
And if I can take this one as well, Stacy, that's a great question because we are. A lot of those new professionals go through this process and have that transition shock, and they go from being supervised to having that independent practice experience. I think the biggest difference that we have between us as athletic trainers and other professions is that we don't have as much of that support in those early stages. There are some organizations that do a great job with onboarding and providing some support to new athletic trainers. But when you're looking at some of the other professions, there are very few other professions that take brand new graduates and just throw them into the real world and say, here are your keys, now go. So I think that's where we're a little bit different, in which if you look at nursing and some of the others, they have they go through the process of a preceptorship where once they're graduated, credentialed healthcare providers, they still have a preceptor to help mentor them along the way. Whereas in athletic training, as I mentioned, some organizations are doing a great job with that, but there are a lot that aren't. And so I think that's where the biggest difference is. We're normal in terms of the experiences that new athletic trainers go through. We're not as normal in the support that is provided to them through that process.
Thank you, Ashley. Stacey, what do you have to add to that?
Just that, you know, especially the high school setting, you know, there are very few, if you think of the high school setting, it's a setting where on naturally, the person is usually one of the only healthcare providers, might be a nurse. And a lot of high school athletic trainers are the sole athletic trainer at their place. Mm-hmm. Then you put a brand new grad, you put someone who has no history, no practice history by themselves. And you don't see that in other health professions. You don't see nurses going off into a clinical practice by themselves, physicians going off into a clinical practice. And it just is something that, you know, the challenges that new healthcare professionals have, we're very similar, but we are not very nice to our new athletic trainers sometimes.
So that actually segues really nicely into a question that's coming from the audience right now. And they're asking, what are resources available for administrators or senior athletic trainers, senior clinicians that want to improve the transition practice in their environment?
So we have a really good paper that came out a few years ago that I can retweet or tweet out sometime today that has, and Ashley was the lead on this. So I'll talk a little bit and then I'll let her go because she was the lead. And it outlines some things on orientation. Mm-hmm. That are a checklist of orientation. We looked at the things that people had for orientation, and then we looked at what they felt they needed. And that article is actually really good. If it's a location that has an HR department, then there should be some onboarding resources in your own location. But the article is, I think, one of the most helpful things that is very applicable in athletic training.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if I can just add to that a little bit, what the article has is pretty much a checklist of what was being offered to new athletic trainers for that orientation. And while it doesn't go into very specific details of every single one, we do have some recommendations there in the discussion, such as one of the things that people found the most helpful was not only reviewing the emergency action plan, but actually simulating that emergency action plan. Mm-hmm. So that would be one of those recommendations that was made. Whereas at some organizations, you just don't even have an emergency action plan. So trying to develop one was a challenge that we've seen a lot.
Thank you. We'll be sure to link that to the posting for this Jot Chat. So similar, what are some characteristics of successful mentors that can be modeled in athletic training to improve the transition to practice?
So some of the things that we found that have been very helpful for new athletic trainers, one is to be present, and it doesn't need to be geography, but it needs to be, if I have a mentor and I need advice from them, can I text them, call them, email them a question, and will they be receptive and will they respond? And what we found is that depending on the relationship, some people like to talk, some people like to email. So they need to be responsive to that and timely. And timely has different meanings on what's going on today. For some people, the text needs to be immediately returned because it's a quick question. For other people, it could be a conversation for the next day or a conversation later that time. The other thing is to give honest feedback and to not sugarcoat things, to not try to hurt the new mm-hmm. athletic trainer's feelings, but to give them honest feedback. If they're not doing things correctly or if they should find a different approach, then to be honest with them and tell them that.
Yeah.
Ashley,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add one more thing with what I found in some of the more of their literature that I'm looking at, or one of the other studies I'm working on, is for the mentor, if I don't know if there's employers out there listening, but a lot of them liked having a supervisor who was a mentor, but they also liked having someone that was not necessarily their direct supervisor. Because sometimes the new athletic trainers, if they have to ask their supervisor, they'll feel it's more of a judgment and they might be a little, they don't want the supervisor to think the new athletic trainer doesn't know what they're doing or doesn't know what they're talking about. So sometimes having another peer athletic trainer, maybe somebody who's got more experience, especially at the high school, somebody who's in the district can help them and be a resource for them in addition to that supervisor. And that way they don't feel kind of as nervous reaching out to that person because they're not being evaluated by that person.
That's a great piece of advice. What are any resources that are out there for somebody who might be in the position where maybe they have no immediate supervisor to serve as a mentor, or they have the supervisor to serve as a mentor, but they're looking for somebody that's outside, like you had mentioned? Are there any resources for new professionals to identify a potential mentor?
You know, I think some districts in the NATA have fleshed out or thought about doing some mentoring programs. The mentoring issue is tricky because all the literature will tell you that most mentoring relationships, if they're informal, do better than if you're assigned to someone, because just because you're assigned a mentor doesn't mean that you're going to mesh with that person. I think what new athletic trainers need to do is find someone. We've found former preceptors and instructors to be the, when we look at mentoring relationships, which have been the most beneficial for new athletic trainers. They said preceptors, instructors, and even peers, which, you know, we're starting to see the end of the post-professional graduate programs as they used to be, but even with that peer structure system, they've even used individuals as mentors for that type of situation either. I know that for new faculty, there's the NATA mentoring program from the foundation, but I'm not really at this point aware. I know I've heard rumblings of some districts wanting to match up, and I appreciate that effort. It's just tricky. A lot of times there has to be that synergistic mentor-mentee mentality of, I want to help you, you want to help me, and we're on the same wavelength in terms of communication and how often we want to talk and those types of things. I don't mean to sound pessimistic, like we couldn't do some, like the NATA couldn't do something like that and make it seem and create it and it'd be great. I just want to point out that it's not just because you're matched with someone, it's not always a great matching.
However you find your mentor, yeah, let it happen really organically.
Well, yeah. I think one thing that new athletic trainers could do is if they are all alone, like at a high school or something, but reach out to other athletic trainers who are in the same district. Mm-hmm. Because I found that a lot of those athletic trainers, they have similar challenges in those high school settings if they're in the same district, and having somebody else more experienced, that maybe they don't have to reach out on day one and say, will you be my mentor? But just asking questions. And mostly I found people are very receptive to helping out the new athletic trainers in their district because it's like a family. They just help each other out. So I think that would be somewhere to start. Mm-hmm. If that new athletic trainer doesn't have anyone and they need someone local. And then obviously reaching out to their former preceptor, instructors, etc.
And I know that EDAC has a mentor, yes, possibility, mm-hmm, as well. So there's a question coming in from our viewers that's saying, I'm a newly credentialed AT and I'm nervous about my transition to practice without having a well-defined preceptor. What can I do now or immediately after starting my new job to build confidence?
Mentor, find a mentor, find someone that you can talk to, someone that you can ask the questions, and don't be afraid to ask the questions that seem dumb because everyone has had them. Trust me. Ashley, you have any other thoughts?
I would just, for this, I would realize you're not alone. So when you're going, yeah, into this, I think it can be a daunting, but it can also be a very exciting experience because you're going to be on your own. Like, you're on your own as far as you don't have your preceptor over your shoulder. So it's your choice or your chance to get out there and be an athletic trainer. But as Stacy said, ask questions. reach out for help, because there are people around that will be there to help you. And no matter how stupid the question might seem in your head, it's probably not stupid. Somebody else has probably thought the exact same thing. And so just realize that everyone is kind of going through this together. You're all on the same team. They've gone through it maybe before. Reach out and ask questions. There will be people there to support you. And even if you're on your own at a high school somewhere, there's still resources that you can reach out to. And this is, and as far as gaining confidence, something that we've noticed most, because confidence is a big one. It's the first time making a lot of decisions. Mm-hmm. But as far as gaining confidence, just make the decisions. And we found a lot that when you make a decision and you're right, it really helps with that validation. And so that's how confidence grows. Because as a new athletic trainer, confidence is probably going to be a thing. And not only just new athletic trainers, but anyone changing their role, confidence is going to be a challenge. But the longer you're able to be in that role and make decisions and gain experience, that confidence will come. So just thank use you. The resources.
Yeah, that was a very common theme throughout this manuscript was the confidence issue.
The more they the more you practice, the more, even when you make mistakes, you still gain some confidence, because things never go as bad as we fear they're going to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and even if you make mistakes, most of the time it's something very minor, like I forgot to wrap this on in this certain way, and I should have wrapped it this way. It's a pretty minor. You're going to learn from it.
Yeah. What are the most common things that early career clinicians have asked for to help with the transition to practice?
Policies and procedures.
Yeah. Emergency action plan. Protocols, like schedules. Policies and procedures manual will cover a lot of that, because if you can talk about the schedule, you can talk about prioritization of treatment, you can talk about dress code, things like that. Just having that, that's probably what people would need the most when they're transitioning.
Yeah, ordering MRIs, how does the insurance process work? How does the budgeting process work? A lot of the organ administration type things that we, you know, you see as students, but you don't really... It's so hard, because once you're certified, now you're in charge of those types of things, and as students, they just don't get to see as much of it. And you know, I believe this is the article where Skylar, one of our participants, got into trouble. She wasn't really in trouble, but she, you know, they didn't tell her which physician offices to refer to, and when she referred to a different physician's offices, they were upset with her. It's like, well, you need to tell employees what to do so that they refer and do policies the correct way.
Yeah. Clear expectations, like very clear job expectations. Like we've had some situations where the participants didn't know if they were in a high school setting and didn't know if they could treat non-student athletes, if they could just treat general student population. Mm-hmm. And somebody came in one day, needed something as simple as a Band-Aid, and the person got in trouble because it wasn't clear in their job description.
Thanks.
And the other thing is just a good relationship with the overseeing physician. Mm-hmm. We've talked to a handful of new athletic trainers who have no relationship with their overseeing physician. And that is a little scary. And it's no one's fault. I'm not blaming anyone. But there should be the infrastructure to provide them with the support to develop that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And then the ones that do have that relationship, they talk about how beneficial it is because they have somebody that they can ask questions to, they have somebody to refer to, and they can learn from that person as well.
So switching gears a little bit to before people become certified, what can professional programs do to help better prepare students for this transition?
I think, you know, one of the biggest things is to have them read some of the literature, whether it be stuff that Ashley and I and some others have done, or even the nursing literature, and help them understand that all of these feelings and the things that they're going through it's all normal, and that it's okay to feel not confident and to wonder if you've made the right decisions, and then stress over your decisions and all of those thoughts. You know, it will be interesting to see how clinical immersion changes things. You know, there's a lot of kind of talk about clinical immersion and will it, you know, cure the transition to practice? I don't think it will, because we can put students in clinical immersion for 20, 30 weeks for their 2 years, but we still can't, you know, if they go to a different job setting in a new high school, we can't teach them how that budget system works. So there's still things they're going to transition and need to learn. But I think understanding that all of the things are normal, trying to get as much clinical practice, trying to get as much talk interactions with their preceptors of all of the other things of the day-to-day, talking with insurance companies, budgeting, handling situations with coaches, talking to administrators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would agree with that. And just seeing, we found some also research with preceptors and the preceptors that let them have experience with all those different things, talking to coaches. Maybe it's not talking to the coach in the middle of a really stressful situation, but at least having some exposure to talking to coaches, delivering the injury report. Preceptors who let students do more, the students come out and their transition is a lot easier. So they've had practice doing things. And some of our interviews, we've had situations in which somebody said, oh, I was doing an evaluation because I was the first person there and my preceptor literally pushed me out of the way. And then when she got into the clinical setting on her own, she didn't have those experiences. And so I think like the preceptors have a huge, huge role in this. So the what they are allowing them to do, and obviously there are some limitations because the preceptor's job is for the patient care of the athlete. But when students get to be more actively involved in every aspect of patient care, including the documentation and insurance and all those things, they're more prepared for that transition. And I'll agree with Stacey. I think the immersion model is great. We use it here a lot, but our students, they still have to go through the same challenges with transition to practice. It does help a little bit in terms of they are understanding of the schedule a little bit more, but it doesn't solve all the transition to practice problems.
Have you guys changed something in your teaching based upon what you found?
I do have our senior class, and I've implemented more into what, like we talk about some of these articles, we talk about some of these challenges, we talk about some of the big challenges that they'll see and then ways in which they might be able to overcome that. So I've implemented that a little bit in some of my classes. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've done.
Great.
I think that it's so hard because I've been doing this for a while. but you know, we've thought quite a bit about this as we created our new master's program, and we've done some things, especially communication, enhancing some of the simulations and standardized patient experiences that we, at least in our minds, want to provide for the students. But I think with me, the biggest thing I've done is really encourage students to have those non-sexy conversations with their preceptors about something as harmless as liability insurance. Mm-hmm. Do you get your own liability insurance or do you rely on your employer's liability insurance? Not a real fun conversation, but I've seen multiple times on Twitter and other places where someone is a new grad and that's one of the first questions they have. And it's a valid question. It's not a great conversation. I think it's interesting, but a lot of other people don't.
That's actually a perfect segue into an audience question that we have. So how do you see the emergence of support groups for new ATs on social media playing a role in this transition to practice?
That's a great question. We haven't done any research into that. I have not been very big on Twitter until about the last 6 months or so. And sometimes I think the support can be really good. And then sometimes I think the support can be really disheartening, I guess is a safe word to use, because, you know, there's still some old school mentality out there that's being supported on Twitter that, you know, you have to work this many hours and you have to do it this way and you don't. And, you know, it doesn't need to always be the way it's been done. So I don't know research wise, but I would imagine for new athletic trainers, feeling some validation at times and being able to ask questions is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The follow-up from the audience in that is this avenue, so social media, an avenue for mentorship or more of a site for venting?
In my opinion, it's probably more of a site for venting. You know, and I'm a little old school. I think there's something to be said sometimes for phone conversations. So I do encourage new athletic trainers to try to find, whether it be texting or phone or in person, to be able to have conversations, but probably a pretty good avenue for venting.
I would say there's a little bit of both. I would say definitely venting. That's probably one of the primary things. I just saw a Facebook group popped up on my recommended things yesterday about a place to vent. But I think there could be a way to reach out to other people. And I think there's an avenue for reaching out when you have questions. I think while primarily for venting, I think you probably could find a mentor in that area if you reached out for somebody. I think if you just ask, and we're on that, so I think I'm in the Athletic Trainers Professional Development Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And I've been in that one since it was called the YP Facebook group. And people reach out to others and they do get some advice sometimes. So if you're looking for a mentor, I'm sure you could reach out and find one there. And like Stacey said, after that, once you've identified that person, you could probably follow up with a phone call, follow up with texting and things like that to make it a little bit more of a like back and forth type of relationship instead of a one-time seeking advice. So I think it could be useful beyond venting, but I think a lot of it probably has some, and sometimes venting is good. You might need to get some frustrations out, but I think you could use that if as a way to find a mentor.
Great. So circling back to the findings that y'all had in your recently published manuscript. So we already talked a little bit about how there were some differences in secondary schools in regard to policies and procedures and not having a direct supervisor. But did you see any differences in the challenges for those that were graduate assistants versus those that did not go the graduate assistant route, or those that were in an entry level at the master's versus a professional level undergraduate degree?
You know, we actually found that pretty much everyone, regardless of setting, because we did a quantitative study along with this as well that was published earlier this year or last year. I don't remember exactly when it was published, but that regardless of setting, regardless of educational route, whether it was a bachelor's or a master's, graduate assistantship or not, everyone is having the same feelings of kind of that shock. They were having similar challenges. And the biggest differences were certain GAs, and I'll say certain because not all graduate assistantships had this, but certain GAs had more orientation and more mentoring. And I think that was kind of that the biggest difference on that. And some GAs, they were in a secondary school setting where they were just said, here's your school, now go work. And so they weren't having that, but there were GAs that were in a good environment where they got a really good orientation. They had a mentor. They had somebody they could reach out to. They were working in a collegiate setting and they had a team of other athletic trainers there. I think that's where the biggest difference was, not specifically GA versus non-GA. It was more, did they have a network around them? So if they were in the college setting, they typically had that network. They typically had that orientation and that onboarding and that mentor. So I think it was more, not so much GA, non-GA, it was more college versus some high school settings. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, some high schools, they do a really great job. Some of them are working, they've got a really great system set up, but there's a lot of them that have really nothing. And so I think that's where the biggest difference was.
Great. Was there anything that surprised you with your findings? Something that you weren't expecting, Stacey?
I think just the knee jerk that comes out to me right now is the lack of relationship for some of those athletic trainers with their overseeing physician. And when I say lack of relationship, I literally mean lack of relationship. I mean that I've met them one time or I've never really talked to them before. That just seemed really unfortunate. Mm-hmm.
And for you, Ashley, anything surprise you?
I would say there wasn't anything that was a huge surprise, but I think some of it was more disheartening than anything to see that there were all these young professionals who went through this transition and were just thrown to the wolves. And that was a common theme that people said. They were just thrown to the wolves, sink or swim. Those were a lot of the terms that were used. And so I think that's just a little disheartening to see when all of us are going through this together, we're all working towards the same goal. But there are so many people who, when they come out, they just don't have the level of support that they should. Because as I mean, when I look back on mine, I had a great support system and that really helped mold me as a professional. But when I see other people that don't have that support, so that it's not a surprise, it's just a little disheartening.
So my last question for y'all is, what's your biggest take-home message from this?
I have a take-home message that it relates to our findings, but I just want to make one thing really clear. These are some unfortunate situations for everyone. The athletic trainers in the high school setting, the athletic trainers in the Division I, II, and III settings are not hiring new athletic trainers hoping they'll fail. They're not hiring them saying, you know what, I don't care if they have orientation or not. We're all stretched beyond our limits at times. And sometimes there is no one to develop the onboarding that should be offered. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to make really clear that we value the employers and we think the employers want to do a good job and are doing the best they can. I don't know if I'm coming off the right way or not, but I always feel at times when we talk about this that I feel like there's that other person in my head going, "You're employer bashing." And I'm like, well, that's not what I'm trying to do. The employers are also overworked. They're not, you know, the lack of orientation is not the head athletic trainer's problem. It's the system's problem. And we are better. I think as Ashley and I have done this through the years, we have seen things get better and places are really, people are trying. And so, you know, it's just, some of the situations are better than others and that I really feel like employers are trying and are interested and wanting to do better, and have been doing better, by athletic trainers. The biggest take home I thought from the article was that we're not that different than everybody else, that we have the same insecurities and challenges that other healthcare professions have. And, you know, that's a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be different if we somehow had something vastly different or worse. And so we're just like everybody else. We have the same similar insecurities and challenges anytime we change jobs, really, or transition.
Thank you. Ashley.
I think I want to echo what Stacy said, because I think she said it really well in terms of there are people out there that are doing great things and doing what they can, because she's right. We're not employers and athletic trainers. Nobody wants them to fail. No. We want everyone to be successful. The ultimate goal is to provide excellent patient care. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's trying to do what they can. And I think the biggest take home is that there are things and challenges that new athletic trainers will have. And now that we've looked at some of these challenges and we have a little bit of our idea, it can help us as we support new athletic trainers through this transition. And I think in a lot of ways, people might not know where to start, or they're doing things and they're doing great things, but this just gives us a little bit of information of what can we do to help those new athletic trainers. So if they've got a great system going, fantastic. This is a validation for it. If they're trying to develop a new system to support them, this can just give some ideas of somewhere to start.
So what would be the first action step that you would recommend if anybody wants to just try to improve the transition to practice, whether it be their young professional themselves or they're an employer? What's the first action step that we can take?
A policies and procedures.
Yeah. In an orientation that's site specific, mm-hmm. So just basic introductions, basic tour, policies and procedures.
An ongoing orientation, not something that is just one day, mm-hmm. but maybe once a week. And I know there's usually staff meetings once a week or once a month. You know, there's no perfect system with that, but something that's ongoing, that's deliberate, that's a check-in with them every now and then of how are things going, what can we do better, what do you need,
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today. I think it was a very enriching conversation and a lot of next action steps that can come out of this. Again, the work by Dr. Thrasher and Dr. Walker is available online through JAT. And just a reminder that all of our material on the Journal of Athletic Training is open access. So you have opportunities to download and to send it to others who might be interested as well. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. And thank you again to Dr. Walker and Dr. Thrasher. Keep looking at the JAT social media sites. We're going to have some really great content coming on about the upcoming special edition on sports specialization for next month's JAT across all the platforms, JAT Chat, JAT Cast, and the AT tapes. Thank you again, everybody, for joining us today, and have a wonderful day.